It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome to the Untold Story podcast. I'm Martha McCallum. Great to have you with us today. And I'm very happy to be joined today by Liz Truss, the former Prime Minister of Great Britain. She served as a cabinet secretary for 12 years or so prior to that. And her new book is called 10 Years to Save the West, Leading the Revolution Against Globalism, Socialism, and the Liberal Establishment. Liz, good to see you again.
Great.
Last time I saw you, we were outside Buckingham Palace, I think.
Indeed, yes.
Covering a number of very historic events there. You know, it's interesting. When we spoke after you were prime minister, you were the last prime minister to meet with Queen Elizabeth, right, after you were asked to form a government by her. And then just 2 days later, she passed away.
That's right, yes.
You know, if you could give people a sense of, you know, before we dig into a little bit of the politics, very important issues that you raise in your book, because this podcast has told the untold story, I always like to kind of ask, you know, about what was that like for you, and give people a sense of your background, you know, what kind of environment you grew up in, and what was it like for you to be meeting the Queen in that environment?
Well, I never ever thought in my life I'd be in that position, because she'd been on the throne for so long, mm-hmm. for 70 years. She was the backdrop to all of our lives in Britain. And, you know, I come from a normal family. My parents were actually quite left-wing. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Leeds in the north of England. And certainly when I was invited to form a government by Her Majesty, you know, I had no idea she was so close to passing away. And it was just hugely exciting at the time. You know, it was a very dramatic trip there because the weather was very stormy. We were flying in a plane up to Balmoral in Scotland, driving rain. And when I finally got there, she looked very frail, but she deliberately got up to greet me. And she was so on top of everything that was happening in Britain. You know, she was so alive and funny, and it gave me some very, very good advice.
Not all of it that I followed.
I have to admit that. But I had no sense that she was so close to the end, and it was just extraordinary that after we'd had that fantastic meeting, and she'd said, "I'll see you again next week," the next day she wasn't able to attend our Privy Council meeting, and the following day she passed away.
She told you you write that she told you to pace yourself. Is that the advice that you say you didn't take?
Well, perhaps I didn't take it enough. And, you know, I felt a huge loss of her not being there. You know, she had been on the train so long, and you know, her first prime minister was Winston Churchill. And she had that wealth of experience and knowledge and just a different way of looking at the world, I guess.
You talk about the fact that you grew up in Leeds and that your parents were more liberal in their political perspective. What moved you to the right of your mom and dad and the way you were raised?
Well, first of all, like, my parents were very anti-nuclear, so they wanted to abolish nuclear weapons, and they were quite anti-American. And yeah, I saw what President Reagan and Mrs. Thatcher did in the 1980s and how we saw Eastern Europe liberated and the Berlin Wall fell. And, you know, as I was growing up, I was thinking, is this really right? You know, who is actually on our side, and what do I believe in? And my fundamental political belief is about freedom. I think it's so important that people are free to live their own lives. And I hate the idea of the government trying to run everything. And that's what communism was to us, you know, in Britain. We could see what was happening in Eastern Europe. So I think that was a really important factor. And then I went to university, I studied economics, and I thought, you know, these left-wing policies don't work. But I guess when you're brought up in a liberal or left-wing household, all of your parents' friends are left-wing. So I didn't really know what a conservative was. And, you know, I thought they were people with two heads or something like that. And so it was only when I got to university, I met other conservatives that I...
I joined the tribe. In the current environment, it's very interesting to hear you say that. We're watching what's going on up at Columbia, and you see these protests by students who are essentially seem to be on board with the eradication of Israel. They're pro-Palestinian, but some of them are pro-Hamas. Do you think that you would have the opportunity at a university today in the UK or in the US to be exposed to conservative principles and have that opportunity to think about your own upbringing in a liberal household versus another way of thinking? Would that even happen today?
So we do have. So I've just actually been to the conservative group at Oxford University. So we do have conservatives in university. But what they were telling me is they can't really admit that to some of their fellow students, that they can't really voice their true opinions. So I think there are a lot of young people who share conservative values. It's just deeply unfashionable and they're afraid to speak out. And we've got these very virulent left-wing protesters that have also embedded themselves in the university hierarchy, which I think is so worrying when the heads of university are condoning these attacks on free speech or condoning these terrorist sympathisers. That was something that didn't happen 30 years ago. And there's been a horrible rise of anti-Semitism in Britain. You know, we've got people on the streets carrying things like swastikas. And I think it's appalling. It's truly appalling.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you wake up in a different world. And especially when it comes so quickly on the heels of safe spaces in universities and tolerance for every imaginable group. And yet for this group, apparently, there is no tolerance for Jewish students.
But there's also no tolerance of people that believe that men are men and women are women and you can't change your sex. You know, there's no tolerance for people who don't believe in climate extremism. So this is what the left are trying to do. Rather than having a rational debate, they're just trying to close down anyone that doesn't agree with them. And you know, in the US, you have the First Amendment. We don't have that in Britain. So I'm very worried about the future of free speech. You know, are people going to be able to say those things, think those things?
Talk to me a little bit about the US-UK alliance. And you write in your book about learning, when you were foreign secretary, learning of the beginning of the invasion by Russia in Ukraine. The alliances in the world have shifted. So what do you see in the current environment in terms of the strength of the US-UK bond and essentially up against Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea, and extremist groups?
I think our bond is very deep, and I say in my book that the United States is Britain's greatest invention, although we didn't do that on purpose. It wasn't intentional, and various problems after that. But you know, if you look at our history, right back to Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the American Constitution, the ideas about liberty and democracy come from our nations. And what is so troubling now is the number of people in our own countries questioning those values. They're questioning the basic truths of our society and that they're saying we are bad people and bad countries. And I think those people are aiding and abetting our enemies abroad, like Russia, like China, and like Iran. And we have to stand up to them. But as well as standing up to our enemies overseas, we've got to stand up to these people that are trying to undermine our societies from within.
Leadership, in terms of articulating all of that, seems a bit scant at times.
I completely agree. So, you know, don't you remember in the 1980s, President Reagan called out the evil empire?
That's right.
He said the enemies were evil. He said we needed to achieve peace through strength by being prepared to do what it took to take on those enemies. And I fear that's not happening now.
So when you look at the current situation with Israel and their retaliation that has just happened overnight, which is really, you know, it's been back and forth really since October the 7th. And you see this unprecedented missile launch, missile and drone launch from Iran into Israeli territory. We don't hear a lot. The president, the current president Biden, sort of says two things. He says he believes he can both press for a more humane response in Gaza and also support Israel against Iran in the Middle East. Will that work?
Well, I think we need to give Israel our unconditional support. You know, they are the only democracy in the region. They are under existential threat from the likes of Iran, and Iran in particular. And they are best placed to make decisions about how to defend themselves. And I worry about, you know, the United States and others trying to second guess what Israel need to do. And yet, why are we in this situation where Iran's aggression has increased? Well, the sanctions were taken off Iran. The sanctions are actually being circumvented by the Chinese as well, and we haven't done enough to take that on. And we need to learn the lessons of the past. We need to be stronger in taking on Iran. Otherwise, we're in danger of them acquiring a nuclear weapon, and that will be very serious indeed for Israel.
You know, right now there's talk of increasing the sanctions against Iran, however, not on oil sales. And they have made an extraordinary
amount of money. That's where they get all their money from.
On oil sales. That's the main area where they're getting support. But, you know, some of the discussion around this, obviously, is that President Biden does not want to see an increase in gas prices as he heads into the election. What do you think of that?
Well, we know what happened in the 1930s when we appeased regimes because we wanted to have trade with them or we wanted to have economic ties. It's a massive mistake to trade off short-term economic benefits for long-term security of our countries. And you know, we shouldn't be trading with the likes of Iran. We shouldn't be buying their oil because all it is doing is feeding their war machine.
So I think it was last week or maybe earlier this week, a lot has happened this week, David Cameron, the current foreign secretary, also a former prime minister, went down and spoke with President Trump. And you have said that you support President Trump for his reelection. What's the message of that visit by Cameron to President Trump in terms of the current UK government?
Well, I personally am supportive of President Trump. I think the world was safer when President Trump was in the White House than it is now. And I think he strikes fear into the hearts of the free world's enemies, which is needed because we've seen too much backsliding and too much appeasement. And I'm pleased that David Cameron went to see President Trump. I want to see him back in the White House. And we need to make sure that we are communicating as absolutely key allies.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your book is called 10 Years to Save the West. Why that time frame and what do you think happens in either scenario?
Well, we need to get conservative leadership back of the free world. The world's been run by the global left, by Biden, Trudeau, Macron. And what we've seen is we've seen the West under pressure. We've seen our values questioned from within. And we're seeing the rise of these authoritarian regimes. And I don't think that can be turned around quickly. Some of these issues you were talking about, the universities, we've got problems in our schools with children being taught there are 100 genders. We've got problems on our border with immigration and not being able to deal with illegal immigrants. We've got to sort all those issues out. I don't think it's something that you can do just in one presidential term or one prime ministerial term. I think it will take longer than that. But at the moment, what I fear is the West is not on a positive trajectory. We need to turn that around and we need to make sure that we're dealing with those external threats.
So when you look at the coming election in the United States and the current political situation in the UK. I mean, in some ways, it feels like the dynamic has changed forever. I'm not sure how you, you know, how you get some of that back in the current environment. But maybe you're optimistic about that. Are you?
I am optimistic because I think fundamentally, you know, the public want conservative policies. They want to see our border dealt with. They don't want to see huge amounts of illegal immigration. They want our economy to grow. They don't want these eco-extremist policies that stop us fracking or extracting oil. The problem is we've got a very powerful political elite. We've got a very powerful unelected bureaucracy that are stopping these things happening. And one of the things I say in my book is that I was ousted from office because I was undermined by the permanent bureaucracy. And the thing I worry about in the United States is if President Trump is elected, the danger of the unelected bureaucrats, the wider administrative state coming for him. So I think Republicans need to be prepared for that at all.
And I remember thinking that when he won in 2016, that, you know, regardless of your thoughts either way about his election, that the strife would be incredibly intense, and it never did stop. What do you think, just as a student of history, of him as a political character and his desire to go back and to take this on for another 4 years? What do you think about that?
I think it's needed. I think it's needed. You need somebody who's got that toughness, but is also prepared to shake things up. And some people don't like what Donald Trump says. You know, and he says lots of things, and some of them, you know, don't always agree with things he said in the past. But what you cannot doubt is he's somebody that's prepared to take on the establishment. And we've got a problem in both of our countries that people who haven't been elected with ideas that aren't popular, nobody in Britain voted for, you know, children to be taking puberty blockers. Nobody voted for that. And yet it's been happening in our National Health Service. Nobody voted for illegal immigrants to be coming into the country, committing crimes and not being deported. And yet that's happened. So I think you need a political figure who is capable of cracking through that.
So last question, what about you? Are you willing to throw yourself back into that fire again and try to bust up what you say is a, you know, political establishment that tore you down?
I'm not hurrying. You know, I've had my fingers burnt. I'm not hurrying to put them back in the fire. What my book is about is trying to explain to people what happened, because a lot of people sit on their sofa and say, why don't we deliver these conservative policies? You know, why isn't there more political will in government? What I tried to do is deliver those conservative policies, and I got completely trounced by a group of people who weren't elected. And I want people to understand just how difficult it is and how bold the changes we're going to need to make to our system order to deliver those policies again. So that's what I'm focused on.
You know, when you're speaking, it reminds me of the current battle going on in Congress right now over supporting Ukraine, and conservative Republicans, many of them who believe that we shouldn't do that unless we secure our own border, which you just mentioned the dangers of. So which side of that battle would you be on if you were in the American Congress? Would you be saying no money for Ukraine without a secure border?
Well, I do think that America should be supporting Ukraine. I think the problem is that not enough of the right weapons have been given. So the long range weapons, the planes, which are actually sitting here in the United States in storage. So there are weapons that can be used. But I also think there's a massive issue with the border and with illegal immigration into the United States, which we're seeing also in Britain. And we've got a huge problem with lefty lawyers, you know, the courts not actually deporting those people. And we do need to sort out our borders as well.
Yeah.
America needs to be tough at home and tough abroad. And we need your leadership.
Liz Truss, thank you very much. Former Prime Minister of Great Britain. The book is called 10 Years to Save the West, Leading the Revolution Against Globalism, Socialism, and the Liberal Establishment. Good to have you here. Nice
Great
to see you
to be
again.
On the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is The Untold Story. I'm Martha McCallum, and we will see you next time. You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.